Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, September the 6th. Seizures, net technology, equipment upgrades. Local law enforcement agencies seized just over $1.3 million in cash from suspected drug dealers and alleged illegal gambling establishments from 2019 to 2021, enabling them to invest in technology and equipment upgrades. According to records obtained from the Ector County District Attorney's Office through the Texas Public Information Act, the Odessa Police Department did 90% of the seizing, taking in $1.18 million. The Ector County Sheriff's Office seized just under $81,000 and DPS took in just over $48,000 during that three-year time frame. According to Texas state laws, law enforcement officers are allowed to seize cash and property they believe are the ill-gotten gains of criminal activity. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan is then required to file a civil forfeiture action in district court, giving the cash and property owners an opportunity to disprove the cash and property are the result of illegal activities. We never have hearings on those cases because they usually don't show up, Gallivan said. Seizing property and cash and filing forfeiture proceedings can cause controversies in other jurisdictions, but Gallivan said he will not file forfeiture actions unless criminal charges have been filed against a defendant or his office is close to pursuing a criminal case. Legally, there doesn't have to be a conviction, Gallivan said. My policy is we will not seize funds or property unless there's an associated criminal case. The case may not have been resolved yet, but they've been charged with something, whether it's in the state system or the federal system, because occasionally you'll get drug cases where they'll seize money, but it's not of the quantity that the feds want to deal with. But the drugs are high enough, the feds want it. So the criminal case goes federal and we take the forfeiture action. Filing only when there is a criminal case is fair, he said. I don't get to break into your house and steal your TV and then, when they arrest me for doing that, keep your TV. So, I mean, it goes the same with any other crime, and not all prosecutors have that philosophy, he said. I can't speak for everybody across the state. That's how we do it here. According to records, the law enforcement agencies have also seized vehicles, televisions, drones, power tools, and a soundbar in recent years. OPD records show a few of the vehicles have been kept for use by undercover officers. The rest of the property has been auctioned off. Records show that while the vast majority of the seizures are linked to drug cases, that's not necessarily the case when it comes to the percentage of cash seized. In 2019, 51% of the cash seized by OPD was tied to just two illegal gambling cases. The other 16 cases involved drugs. In 2020, 34 drug cases were filed by OPD, and one was a money laundering case in which nearly $44,000 was seized. Overall, OPD seized $609,428 that year. In 2021, 50 forfeiture cases involving OPD were filed, and roughly 30% of the $421,589 seized was connected to five illegal gambling cases. Seven of the 50 cases involved theft cases, and the remaining were drug cases, records show. Roughly $84,000 was seized in a catalytic converter theft case, and nearly $35,000 was seized from two people accused of illegally selling buyer tags, which are temporary registration tags for motor vehicles. In a third case, more than $18,000 was seized from a man accused of selling catalytic converters and drugs, records show. Proving their property and cash aren't ill-gotten gains can be somewhat difficult, Gallivan said. It depends. We've had some people, game rooms, who were just employees, and the cop seized money out of their purse, for example. Well, we gave that money back because that, obviously, in my opinion, was not proceeds, even though it's their salary and it came indirectly from the illegal proceeds. They didn't earn it illegally. They earned it as part of their salaries. So we gave that money back, Gallivan said. Gallivan said he doesn't believe the fact undercover game room operations typically result in large cash seizures has been motivating law enforcement agencies to conduct such operations. But you know, with any criminal enterprise, that's the quickest way to try to shut them down. You go after their money. If they can't make money or keep the money, they're not going to stay in business, Gallivan said. There are strict rules about how law enforcement agencies can spend the cash they seize or get after seized property is auctioned off, Gallivan said. His office, which receives a percentage of the cash seized, but 0% of the auction proceeds, uses it for technology upgrades, Surface laptop, and training, he said. We use it to keep our computers up to date, and we have Surfaces. Because of COVID, we need the ability to work from home, and that's where the Surfaces come in. We currently have 2 employees who are remote, and we actually just hired another 2 that will be remote, so they just have Surfaces, Gallivan said. Records obtained from the OPD through the TPIA requests show the department has also used its seizure money for technology. There's a very limited amount of things that you can actually use those funds for, OPD Chief Mike Gerke said. You can't use it to, like, build a new building. I can't fly to Mexico for a vacation. None of those things. It's just equipment. Gerke strongly believes in intelligence-led policing, which results in police officers being deployed to areas where the data shows crimes are occurring. In recent years, the department has invested in drones, incident management cameras that are monitored by the city's real-time intelligence center, flock safety cameras that read license plates, and Cloud Gavel, which is an electronic warrant system that allows officers and judges to create, review, and process arrest and search warrants in the field. Asked about the extent of the drug issue in Odessa, Gerke said, "We're not unlike other communities. I would say, like any other community in the United States, there are drug dealers in Odessa, and we target those guys. That is part of our intel-led policing strategy because everything's related, right? So narcotics dealers and violent crime and property crimes, the vast majority of that stuff is all interrelated," Gerke said. "So the strategy is to use whatever means legally to remove people from our community that are causing social harm. So if that means if we know of someone that is potentially violent and we can make a narcotics case on them, then we would go that route. Are there connections to cartels in Odessa? I would say there's probably connections to cartels in any community in Texas. The most prevalent drug in Odessa currently is methamphetamine, followed by marijuana," Gerke said. "Most cases are prosecuted in the federal court system," he said. OPD's narcotics unit is comprised of a sergeant and 6 investigators, but thanks to Cloud Gavel, patrol officers now play a role in narcotics investigations too," Gerke said. "We really changed the role of patrol when we went to intelligence-led policing. So we gave them a lot more power," Gerke said. "A patrolman's job is not just to drive around and write a few tickets and take reports. We actually have patrolmen getting arrest warrants and search warrants and that sort of thing on stolen property and on narcotics sometimes." Permian Basin Fair and Expo. Fairgoers enjoy axe throwing and other activities. One by one, each axe thrower has been stepping up to try and win the grand prize of the new Xbox console at the WTX Axe Throwing Mobile Unit at the Permian Basin Fair and Expo. Either that or just have some fun. The Permian Basin Fair and Expo kicked off Friday and will continue throughout the rest of this week, ending on Sunday. From rodeos to concerts to all the rides and funnel cakes, there's been something for nearly everyone to enjoy at this year's fair, located at the Ector County Coliseum and the surrounding area. That includes axe throwing. Throughout the weekend, Diana Davis, who is one of the people that helps run the axe throwing unit at the fair, says there's been a lot of people coming by and having fun. It's been pretty successful, Davis said. Sunday night, we started getting a bunch of kids here to throw. Kids 8 and up can throw. It got busier throughout the evening. A lot of people had a good time with it. They had never gotten to throw an axe before, so it was a good experience. It was great. In case you're wondering, no one has yet won the Xbox, at least not as of Monday afternoon. That's one of the prizes, Davis said. We've had some people come pretty close. You do have to hit all 5 of the bullseye targets. There are different prizes, but you have to hit all 5 in the red. We've had some people hit 3 out of 5, but we have yet to have anyone win the prize. That hasn't stopped people from accepting the challenge. I had one guy who might as well have bought an Xbox with the amount of times he threw, Davis said while laughing. Regardless, fairgoers have had fun throwing axes. Most recent, Permian High School graduate Caden Garcia. He can attest that it's more arduous than it looks. It was harder than I thought, Garcia said, but it was pretty sick because I've never thrown an axe before. It was a good experience. It was pretty fun. He may not have won a new Xbox, but he says he wasn't playing for one. Sadly, I wish I was, Garcia said with a laugh. Garcia was out at the Permian Basin Fair and Expo with his friends and family Monday, enjoying not only the weather, but all the entertainment that was offered for a low price. Monday was Dollar Day, where attendees got in for only $1. You have a lot of fun games, such as the axe throwing and the rides and good food like funnel cakes, Garcia said. Plus, it was a $1 entry fee today. Tegan Salgado, who is from Stanton, was another person out at the fair on Monday with his family. He also took part in the axe throwing. I just got out there and threw it, Salgado said. It was fun. It was a little tough. Olivia Torres, 9 from Midland, has been another participant in the axe throwing. It was fun, Torres said. I like being able to hit the target. She said she hasn't been able to hit the target much, but she still enjoys throwing axes. It's cheap entertainment, Torres said. Davis said she's had real experienced people come by and throw, and others with no experience throughout the weekend at the fair. We've seen people who have thrown some of the heavier axes before, Davis said. We have our small metal ones here. We've also had other people who have never thrown axes before, but have done really well. There's not much to it, maybe a little technique, but it's a good time, and anyone can do it. Other fairgoers have been busy enjoying their rides and spending time with family. It's been really cool, Jeremy Dixon said, who was at the fairgrounds Monday, with his family. We just come out and hang around, and any time we can hang around with our family, it's great. Our family is getting older. It's got a little bit of something for everyone. Last Friday's opening day featured a little bit of rainy weather. Since then, however, the clouds have cleared and sunny skies have returned. Everything's been good, Stacy Price said, who runs one of the smoothie drinks station at the carnival. The weather's been cooperating with us, so it's been good. For more information about this year's Permian Basin Fair and Expo, go to https://tinyurl.com/3xm2rj7t. Hobbs police respond to hospital incident. The Hobbs Police Department has received messages inquiring if there was an active threat situation at the Covenant Hobbs Hospital, a department Facebook post said. There were few details, but the post said officers did respond to the hospital in reference to a subject with a gun. Officers located the subject in a vehicle leaving the scene, and he was taken into custody for numerous criminal offenses. Further investigation determined no shots were fired, and detectives continued to investigate this incident. There was no threat to anyone located inside the hospital due to this incident. The post said more information will be released as it becomes available. Quick hits, PB Fair and Expo. The 46th Annual Permian Basin Fair and Expo, celebrating the red, white, and blue, has been scheduled through September 11th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Gates open at 5 p.m. through Friday and noon Saturday and Sunday. There will be music, carnival, petting zoo, Miss Permian Basin Fair, scholarship pageant, Little Miss and Junior Miss Basin Fair, talent show, tractor pulls, dog extravaganza, oil burners, farming and ranching shows, creative arts, food vendors, and more. Sensory Special Day, sponsored by Superior Health Plan, will take place for those with sensory needs, and families will be allowed to enter the fair at no cost from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesday. During those hours, music and noise will be at a minimum. For tickets, event schedule, or more information, call at 432-550-3232 or visit pbfair.com. Disney Junior Live on Tour, Costume Palooza. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present Disney Junior Live on Tour, Costume Palooza at 6 p.m. today. Doors open at 5 p.m. Costumes can be worn by guests under the age of 14. Visit WagnerNoel.com. Exhibition, Reception, and Workshop. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled an exhibition, a permanent record featured works by Heidi Petrie from today through November 19th. A special reception will be held for Petrie and new library director Howard Marks at 5:30 p.m. September 16th on the first floor. Petrie will host a library card art workshop at 2 p.m. September 17th at the library. The reception and workshop are both free of charge and open to the public. This will coincide with September's Library Card Sign-Up Month. The library is partnering with Odessa Arts, the Writers League of Texas, and Friends of the Ector County Library for a special week of literary-themed events during Library Card Sign-Up Month. For a schedule of events, visit odessaarts.org/calendar or ector.lib.tx.us. New OHS Orchestra Director Seeking Excellence. Odessa High School's new orchestra director, John Benton, is returning to his hometown area with hopes of growing the program and achieving top form. Originally from Midland, Benton was most recently in Pampa as director of bands. He has 11 years of music education under his belt. I grew up in Midland and went to Midland High School, so returning to the Permian Basin is returning home for me, Benton said. Benton earned a Bachelor of Music with an emphasis in education from West Texas A&M University in Canyon. At WT, he said, everyone is a performer first, so they have emphasis, and his was in education. He also has a Master's of Arts in Conducting from WT. They have a fantastic program. Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said, many of our students from the Permian Basin area continue up to WT for music ed. Music education, lots of times they're even going to be performers, and then the connection is a lot of their professors come down to help our band programs. So it's a very small world in the music field. Around sophomore year of high school, Benton decided music education would be his career path. Benton was in band and orchestra all through high school, playing the violin in orchestra and percussion in band. Sitting out during rehearsal on one of the pieces, he realized how much he loved music and that he didn't think he could do without it after high school. Benton started violin in sixth grade and began percussion in seventh grade at San Jacinto Junior High in Midland. He continued both all through high school and college. There are 44 students in OHS Orchestra. Holly said Benton is also helping with the fifth grade strings program that is starting in Ector County ISD. Currently, my schedule is high school in the mornings, middle school in the afternoon. It depends on the day, but I go to one of the two feeders, either Bowie or Crockett, Benton said. He said that he knew about the fifth grade strings starting after he applied. That was not something that scared me because I was in a smaller district when I was band director, and I taught 6th to 12th grade. I had the varsity band, and I had beginner clarinets and beginners this, that, and the other instruments, so this is not really any different than what I've been doing. It's just stringed instruments instead, which is also part of my background, Benton said. He added that he feels it's very beneficial for students to start strings early. I think so much of any instrument you learn is the muscle memory and the music fluency. I think it's incredibly beneficial getting them to read music, early game, getting them to understand the physicality of playing those instruments. I think it's a wonderful thing for those students to do, Benton said. Holly noted that stringed instruments are unique because mastery takes a long time. The younger we start them, the better, Holly said. With stringed instruments, Benton said it's a little bit of a steeper learning curve. It's not like guitar where you have frets. You put your fingers down in approximately the same spot. You have to be absolutely precise, or like the woodwinds, you have a certain key combination and the notes come out. Stringed instruments. You have to be very precise with your fingers all throughout, Benton added. The size of the orchestra is about the same this year as it was last year. Holly said the concept of elementary strings is to develop feeder programs for orchestra. Benton said there are a lot of really brilliant kids, and they get pulled in a lot of different directions. A lot of them do get involved in certain academic classes that create schedule conflicts. We're hoping to maybe find some solutions to that eventually as well, but it's really a blessing having so many brilliant students. They've been absolutely wonderful to me since I came here. They've been very kind and accepting and working really hard, Benton said. His goal for the orchestra is excellence. It's not about the trophies. It's not about the competition. It's about performing at a very high level and having musical excellence as your goal. If you do that, things like trophies and the competitive aspect will follow, Benton said. But that shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be how can we perform, whether it's a Halloween concert, a holiday concert, UIL, a spring concert, playing for a group of fifth graders, no matter what it is, it should be an excellent performance. So it's enjoyment of music and musical excellence, he added. Holly said they are very pleased to have Benton on board. He brings a lot of energy and professionalism that we feel is very important for this high school. In this particular program, Holly said. Benton said the program has started using a Facebook page and website that can be found at www.ohsbroncoorchestra.org and www.facebook.com.ohsorch. As the excellent grows and the students perform at a higher level, interest in the program will grow, and more people will just gravitate to it. They like to be part of something that's successful, Holly said. The orchestra's first concert is October 6th at the OHS Performing Arts Center. It will be a Halloween theme concert, tentatively called A Nightmare on Dotsie. Hoping we play well enough so the joke doesn't write itself, Benton said. Being back in the Permian Basin, he said, has been great. His parents still live in Midland, so it's a lot easier to see them. One of the great things about the Permian Basin I've seen, and I'm still just dipping my toes in it, was there's such a good fine arts culture. There's musical opportunities for the students, for performances, for people to see, and that's something that I definitely miss being in a smaller town, Benton said. He added that there was emphasis on fine arts in the Panhandle, but the region is different because it's so spread out. A lot of the towns and communities are an hour plus away from everything, so you don't get the opportunities for collaboration on the same level that you do here. I know some of our smaller communities are still fairly spread out, but it is more that the Permian Basin itself is self-contained, so it's a lot easier to take students to a performance. The logistical challenges of the Panhandle are a little bit different, just because of the nature of the geography, Benton said. Benton is married to his wife Sharon, who is a music therapist working at Spectrum of Solutions in Midland.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, September 3rd, 2022, weekend edition. Section A. Rig count drops across Midland, Permian Basin, Texas, and the U.S. by Mella McEwen. It was a rough week for the nation's energy industry, both in terms of commodity prices and activity levels. Oilfield Services Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count fell 5 rigs to 760, the fourth weekly decline in the last 5 weeks. The count is still 263 rigs higher than the 497 reported last September. The number of rigs seeking crude oil dropped by 9 to 596, the sharpest drop since last September, and the lowest count since early August. The count is 202 rigs higher than the 394 drilling for oil a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 4 to 162. Texas rig count fell by 9 to 362, 130 more than the 232 at work statewide last year. New Mexico added 2 rigs for 108. North Dakota joined New Mexico as the other producing state to see a higher rig count than Texas. The Permian Basin fell by 6 rigs to 342. Lee County, New Mexico, continues to be the most active county in the Permian Basin with 64 rigs. Eddy County was in second place with 41. Martin County had 34. Midland County and Reeves County each reported 33. Loving County dropped 4 rigs. Ward County reported 15 rigs for a second week. Glasscock, 13 rigs, up 3. Winkler County, which had seen no activity the previous week, saw renewed activity with 1. Dawson and Schleicher County saw no activity this week.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, September 3rd. From To Your Good Health. Dear Dr. Roach, can Dupuytren's contracture be transmitted from one person to another via plasma donation? Is the theory a consensus in the medical field? Answer. Dupuytren's contracture is a condition of fibrosis in the connective tissue of the hand, which leads to decreased hand flexibility and ultimately, without treatment, to contractures, where fingers curl into the palm. There is no known person-to-person transmission of Dupuytren's tract contracture. It's not an infectious disease. The risk factors include previous family history, being over 50, repetitive trauma, diabetes, smoking, and alcohol. Some other related medical illnesses can also predispose a person to Dupuytren's contracture. Potential treatments include surgery and enzyme injection. The word theory means a well-thought-out explanation based on the scientific method that help explains why certain observed phenomena occur. Your question about Dupuytren's contracture being transmissible by plasma donation is a hypothesis for which I could find no support.
Man bites off more than he can chew with comments. Dear Abby for Tuesday. Dear Abby, every year my girlfriend and I take each other out for dinner on our birthdays and bring a gift. This year, even though I am currently experiencing a financial hardship, I bought her a gift and offered her dinner. At the restaurant, she ordered the largest portion of what she wanted. She stated it's what she's always ordered in that restaurant. I responded that she always takes half of it home, and that I had offered to buy her dinner for that night, not for 2 days. She got very angry and said I was ruining her birthday. She then said she'd pay for her own meal. I declined her offer and paid, but now I'm wondering if I was wrong. She did pay for half the appetizer, which I didn't want or eat, and she left the tip. Should I have told her before we went out to dinner that I was on a tighter budget? Can our relationship be saved? Losing in Las Vegas. Dear Losing, strong relationships thrive when there is honest communication. You and the birthday girl have been seeing each other for an extended period of time. If money is tight, you should have mentioned it long before her birthday rolled around. Yes, she should have been aware of it before you invited her to dinner. Because she wasn't, I can understand why she might have been put off by what she may have interpreted as a snide comment rather than a cry for help. Can your relationship be saved? Yes, as long as you two really start talking to each other. Dear Abby, I am in my early 40s. I have reconnected with a girl I dated in high school. Things are wonderful. I've come to understand that she was wronged by other men more than once in the years in between. But I have also learned it was happening during our relationship as teens. I cannot stop ripping myself in half for not realizing it was happening and doing nothing to stop it. I wasn't damaged. She was. I'm hesitant to do anything that makes her revisit her pain, but it is something I can't let go of. I'm not sure how I should proceed in the present so that I don't let the past damage a future that seems so bright. Could you please give me a woman's point of view? Cautious in Michigan. Dear Cautious, understand that you and this woman were very different people when you dated more than 20 years ago. I suspect my point of view is similar to what you would get from a man. If you plan to proceed with this romance, the two of you should get at least 6 months of couples counseling from a licensed professional. A lot has happened to you both in the intervening years since high school. There was nothing you could do to stop anything that happened. She was a willing participant in those failed relationships. Your future with her will be brighter once you know each other better as adults, which will involve frank communication on both of your parts.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.